So it takes number 21 to 40. All the citizens belonging to the various orders of Varna and Ashram then bathed in that place, where even the most grievous sinner can immediately be free from all sinful reactions. So what is that place called? What are they talking about? Where are they taking bath? Yeah, in the Jamuna. You can say it's the Jamuna. So Jamuna is the most sacred river in the universe. Even Prabhupada says in one purport in the Bhagavatam, he says that the Jamuna is hundreds of times more purifying than bathing in the Ganga. Both are equal in the sense that when you're in Mayapur and Vrindavan are non-different. So because they're non-different, then the two rivers have equal potency. But still Prabhupada is making the point of the sacredness of the Jamuna. So to purify sins, one has to visit a holy place. That's why Prabhupada instructed that once a year we all go to the holy dham, Mayapur, Puri, Vrindavan. Then we should do that on an annual basis, make that part of our program. And there is no greater way to get purified. Prabhupada said you preach in the West all year and you become a little contaminated, because the Western world is contaminating. And when we get a little contaminated, then we go to the holy dham and we take bath in the Ganga or the Jamuna, and we associate with the sadhus over there, and we become purified. So that's the basic system. So here, after the jagya is performed, then everyone goes to the Jamuna. Before you do something auspicious, you have to take a bath in order to purify yourself. And then at the end, in order to consecrate or make it all finalized, one also takes bath. So they've at the beginning, Yudhishthira purified himself, and at the end, him and all the citizens, everyone went to the Jamuna and all took bath. Any points? Next, the king put on new silken garments and adorned himself with fine jewelry. He then honored the priests, assembly officials, learned brahmanas, and other guests by presenting them with ornaments and clothing. So, Alia, you want to read them?
Srila Prabhupada writes, "The king not only dressed himself and decorated himself, but he also gave clothing and ornaments to all the priests and to the others who had participated in their yajnas. In this way, he worshipped them all."
Any points? It means the duty of the kshatriya is to protect and maintain. If you can't protect the citizens and maintain the citizens, then you should not be a leader or a ruler. And just like all over the world now, there is poverty. Poverty is a sign of weak leadership. Because in an opulent kingdom like Yudhishthira, in his kingdom there is no poverty. Because everyone is maintained. That's the duty of the king. No one should be hungry. Just like in the world now, 1 in 8 billion go to bed, 8 billion people go to bed hungry every night. So there's nearly 8 billion people on the planet. So that means nearly 1 out of 8 people is going to bed hungry every night. And that just means the leaders are not looking after the citizens properly, because no one should be hungry. And in Western countries like Europe, Australia, America, all these countries, nearly You know, like in the supermarkets, nearly a third of the food gets thrown away. They don't even sell it. It doesn't even get out to the, gets to its use by date, wouldn't they? Just throw it away. Like all the bakery section at the, so they just throw it away. You know, just throw it in the bin. And then many of the vegetables and so forth, like if you go to the, what do you call that? To the supermarkets, like the zucchinis, they all have to be like a standard size. Like, this big and certain. So any that are a little bit too big or too small or strange shape, before the food even gets to the supermarket, they're throwing sometimes up to 50% away. So it's just big wastage. And in the meantime, so many people are hungry in the world. So this just means mismanagement, that's all. If you manage these things properly, then no one should be hungry. And the most important thing is to have a vegetarian diet. Because as we know, when you have to feed all the animals, all the grains it takes to feed the animals, that grain could be used for the human beings, and then society would be very different. So this is the duty of the kshatriya, duty of the king. Everyone has to be protected, everyone has to be maintained. If you can't protect your citizens, then you're not a kshatriya. And protection back then meant you actually had to show some bravery. You had to fight. These days we don't even fight. Everything is just done by artificial means. Even like in America, they're trying to, they're having discussions about the semi-automatic rifles. Like in New Zealand, after what happened last week in New Zealand now, they're going to ban all the semi-automatic weapons. And in America, they're having that discussion as well. So there's no bravery involved. It's not a kshatriya.
Thank you.
No, that's not how a kshatriya fights. A kshatriya doesn't use a weapon where you can't defend yourself with it. No. Kshatriya means, equal weapon. You use bow and arrow, I use bow and arrow, you use sword like that. And it's equal like that. That's actual kshatriya. So a real kshatriya has to protect, he has to maintain, otherwise he's not qualified. Any points? In various ways, King Yudhishthira, who had totally dedicated his life to Lord Narayana, continuously honoured his relatives, his immediate family, the other kings, his friends and well-wishers, and all others present as well. So, this is the system of service. Yudhishthira was the emperor of the earth, practically. I think technically Duryodhana was considered the emperor, but Yudhishthira had just done what even Duryodhana could not do. So that means Yudhishthira was the most powerful person on the planet. And you read in this chapter, while Yudhishthira is on his throne, even Krishna is sitting in his assembly. So he is considered like the most powerful of kings on the planet. And yet, it describes that he is serving Krishna, but everyone else. If you read this verse, it says, in various ways, he dedicated his whole life to Narayana, but continually honored his relatives, the immediate family, the other kings present as well. So, the higher one gets within a position of authority within our movement, it means the more you have to serve. The more powerful you are in terms of your authority and stature, means you have to serve more. You have to do more service. Just like, many of you are like bhakti vriksha leaders or, preachers, or you're running something, some service. When you take control of something, it means you do the most service. You have to organize everything, coordinate everyone, coordinate everything to make sure it all takes place. So it's a lot of work. So Yudhishthira was the highest, most powerful. But he doesn't want, he wasn't just accepting service for, from everyone else, but his mentality was to serve all of the others. No. And to make sure that everyone else was being fully maintained and looked after. So he would personally make sure all of the guests, you know, not just Krishna, but everyone, was fully satisfied and maintained. So that was Yudhishthira's greatness. And we see really great leaders, then they will offer service to others in so many ways. Just like Radhanath Swami, you know, he used to, when in Chalpati, or maybe he still does, then he was on the roster to clean the toilets for in the brahmachari area. He had his own room, and then the brahmacharis had their space. And then, you know, he would go every week, he was on the roster to clean the toilets. You know, so he was the most qualified person within the community. He was the leader of the community. He was the one that everyone respected the most. Had the most spiritual qualification. But instead of just accepting service from everyone else, he would personally go and serve the other devotees. And what's the most humble service you can do practically is to clean the schoolhouse. So this is very, this is what a real leader does. A real leader will do the most service. And that's why the leaders within our society, they do the most service, because they have to take the most responsibility. They have to inspire all of the other devotees. So they're constantly pushing themselves and organizing situations so that other devotees can progress in Krishna consciousness. So this is the position of a leader. So Yudhishthira is showing us that if you're going to become a leader, you have to do service. You can't just sit back and accept service from everyone else. If you're becoming a leader and you're just accepting service, that means you're not really qualified as a leader. Because a real leader will serve the other devotees. Any points? All the men there shone like demigods. They were adorned with jeweled earrings, flower garlands, turbans, waistcoats, silk dhotis, and valuable pearl necklaces. The lovely faces of the women were beautified by their matched earrings and locks of hair, and they all wore golden belts. So as we've quoted the last few weeks, what does it say in the last verse of the Bhagavad Gita? Yeah, wherever there is Krishna, Yogeshwara, wherever there is Arjuna, Dhanurdhara, then there are victory, morality, opulence, and extraordinary power. This is when, if someone's an empowered leader, you'll see these four. Means there will be victory. Just like, look at Prabhupada. Right? So Prabhupada, wherever he was, there was always victory. But it did mean that he did not struggle. Right? It was very difficult for Prabhupada. Prabhupada became disheartened. You know, in 1970, so he came in 65, and then 65 to 67, he was preaching on the East Coast of America, and then he went across to the West Coast, and he travelled to Canada and a few places. But then Prabhupada became ill, and Prabhupada had to go back to India in 67 and spend a number of months in India in the hot season, because the cold weather in America was too much for his health. So he had to go to India in the heat, and then that revived his health, and then he came back. And then 68, 69, 70, the movement began to spread more. The movement really began to take off after 67, going into 68. You know, the first couple of years, and Prabhupada was just really establishing, you know, it didn't grow a lot. You know, there's New York, and then he went across to San Francisco, and then in Canada, and a few places, but it wasn't real. But then 68 onwards, then devotees went to London, they met George Harrison, and, you know, things began to really take off, and then they went to France and different places, and so it was beginning to accelerate the preaching. But in 1970, the devotees gathered, and some of the devotees, some of Prabhupada's leaders, the more senior disciples, they had become influenced by Mayavad philosophy. And because they'd been influenced, because they were young devotees, they didn't know the philosophy very well. So they became influenced by Mayavad philosophy, and they began to preach it to the other devotees. And then Prabhupada became disheartened, because he's working so hard, and then now the philosophy was becoming obscured, and even some devotees weren't respecting Prabhupada properly. So then he called my Guru Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and he said, "Take me away from here." Prabhupada was somewhat disheartened. He said, "Take me away." Yeah. And then he said, "Where do you want to go?" And he said, "Take you to the other side of America." He said, "It's not far enough." And he said, "Where do you want to go?" And he said, "You know," and they traveled through Japan to India, back to India. And then, you know, Prabhupada later saw it as Krishna's arrangement. Mm-hmm. Because he said that when he left Rukmini Dwarkadish in Los Angeles, Prabhupada prayed to him and said, "You know, we have such a nice temple here for you now, and we've been serving you, now you're sending me away." And Prabhupada said he could not understand. But then he saw later that Krishna gave him even more. Now they went to Juhu, and then the big temple in Juhu, even bigger than Watsika Avenue. And then Prabhupada said that, you know, when that temple, he said, "I could not understand why Krishna was sending me away. But then when I got, and after the years of struggle, and then finally Juhu was established and everything," Prabhupada said, "then I could understand what Krishna's arrangement was." So Prabhupada had, nothing was easy. And we think, oh, you know, Prabhupada was empowered. And, no, it was a struggle the whole time. Prabhupada's health was a struggle. You know, if you really want to understand, you know, Prabhupada's health situation, if you read Hari Sauri Prabhu's diaries, then you really understand. You know, Prabhupada was not well. You know, he had diabetes and his teeth were loose, and there were complications continuously. Hari Sauri Prabhu was with Prabhupada every day for 18 months. He said he doesn't remember a day when Prabhupada wasn't struggling with his health. You know, he's like 75 years old and he's just traveling constantly around the world and pushing himself. You know, so it was a struggle. You know, and the Juhu land was a big struggle, and in America, you know, these disciples were getting contaminated by Mayavad philosophy, and so many difficulties were there constantly. You know, and then devotees would fall down and they'd leave, prominent disciples. You know, his GBC mate, Dwiza Prabhu, here in Australia, he fell down, you know, stopped being a sannyasi, and then, you know, caused problems. So constantly it was hard for him to push everything on, but he continued to push. So that's why it says in the last verse of the Gita, wherever there is Krishna and Arjuna, pure devotion to Krishna, there will be victory. But victory doesn't mean it won't be a struggle. It will be a struggle. But there will be victory. Victory, morality. So wherever there is a powerful devotee, there will be morality. People will begin to follow the four regulative principles. And, you know. Prabhupada went straight into the heart of the hippies, you know, and found all the hippies, and then he got them to start following the four regulative principles. And following the four regulative principles is the opposite to being a hippie. You know, so Prabhupada went to, at the time when America was the most hedonistic, the time in history where it was, you know, on one level very difficult to preach, and Prabhupada went in there with pure principles, which he did not compromise, and then he made so many devotees. So we have victory, morality,
opulence.
Yeah. So you see, wherever there is Krishna, wherever devotion to Krishna is being practiced, then everything becomes very opulent. You see, like this temple is very opulent. And then there is so much opulence, which is being... Actually, Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, the Prabhupada's guru, said that the devotee should have the best of everything. Because they're Krishna's devotees. Just like we offer Krishna the best, we should also offer the devotees the best. So everything should be used in Krishna's service, and devotees should have the best of everything used in Krishna's service. That's the philosophy. So then opulence will be there, wherever the devotee. So you see in this verse, there's great opulence. The women are wearing gold belts. You know, the women in Kali Yuga just wear like gold, a little bit of gold on the ears. You know, or you get a gold ring. Right? But they're wearing gold belts, like whole belts made of gold. That's how opulent everything was. And then, extraordinary power. The victory, morality, opulence, and extraordinary power. Because you'll see wherever there is Krishna and pure bhakti, you'll see that devotees can do extraordinary things. Things which would not be possible otherwise. But devotees can do them. Why? Because when you serve Krishna, these things will manifest. Any points?
Wherever there is Krishna, there should be all the six opulences, right, also?
Yep.
So only four are mentioned here.
They're not those. Those six and those four, they're two different lists.
When the opulence is common between the two. Opulence is common between the two.
Yeah, that's common. I mean, extraordinary power means strength, you know, so...
Okay.
Yeah, but they're it's a different list, two different.
Okay.
Then the highly cultured priests, the great Vedic authorities, who had served as sacrificial witnesses, the specifically invited kings, the brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, sudras, demigods, sages, forefathers, and mystic spirits, and the chief planetary rulers and their followers, all of them, having been worshipped by King Yudhishthira, took his permission and departed, O King, each for his own abode. So, you see that everyone in the universe came to this yajna of Maharaj Yudhishthira. It says here even demigods came. You know, they personally came in and took part in the yajna. This shows how powerful Yudhishthira was. And if you read the Mahabharata, if you read the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavatam is about the Yadu dynasty, and then Mahabharata is about the Kuru dynasty. Right. So you see in the Mahabharata, there are times when the demigods are defeated by the Pandavas. Just like there's a time when they're in the forest, and then Karna and Duryodhan and a number of the Kurus, they're attacked by the demigods. And then Arjuna and the Pandavas, they come to defend them. And they actually defeat the demigods. That's how powerful Arjuna was. Like, the most powerful people in the universe were living here on earth. Now, the most powerful people are not living on earth. The demigods are much more powerful than anyone in Kali Yuga. But previously, Yudhishthira and Arjuna and the Pandavas, they were more powerful even than the demigods. So when they did a sacrifice, the demigods came. That's how powerful they were. And you see in the Bhagavatam, which is the story of the Yadu dynasty, Krishna was present within the Yadu dynasty with his family and Balaram. So there are pastimes where they defeat the demigods. You know, the Yadu dynasty decides to get the Sudama assembly hall. So everyone goes to Swaga, defeats the demigods, and then brings the Sudama assembly hall back to present it to Krishna. So that is the power of the Kurus and the others. So here, Yudhishthira, he is establishing the perfect world order, the perfect government. And that is the mission of the devotees. Why did Yudhishthira? He wanted to rule on behalf of Krishna. And that's the responsibility of ISKCON, because actually it's the government's duty to rule on behalf of Krishna. And the government are not doing that all around the world. Like, you know, Donald Trump is not ruling on behalf of Krishna. Right? Scott Morrison is not ruling on behalf of Krishna. That's not the emphasis. No. So then, Prabhupada, he could see the government is useless in most situations. So what did Prabhupada decide to do? Prabhupada said, okay, ISKCON will rule on behalf of Krishna. We will establish. Right? So you can see what our challenge is. How much influence do we have at this point in time? Not a lot. If you look in Australia, we don't have a lot of influence. No. But we're meant to be leading the whole of society. Right? 25 million Australians are meant to be following us. And this shows how much work we have to do, because most of them don't take us that seriously. They just like our food. Oh yeah, your food's nice and everything and all that, but they don't take us that seriously. So Yudhishthira was able to establish a Krishna-conscious government. And that is the mission of actually ISKCON. We're meant to establish Krishna consciousness on a much larger scale. That was Prabhupada's vision. So you can see how much work we have to do. So what will we do about it? We have to do something. So, any points?
So here also the Pandavas were the children of the demigods.
Yeah.
So in that case there was the Shakti. Obviously this was, you know, Krishna was there. Yudhishthira Maharaj is the son of Dhammaraj and Arjuna being the son of Indra. Vayu, Bhima.
Yeah. Even then, when Arjuna was protecting Arjuna, when he was eating, consuming the forest,
yep.
He defeated Indra. So
his father.
His father.
Yeah, good point. Any other points?
Mystic spirits came for the Yajna, mystic spirits. That's one baby. The last thing that's
up. Mystic spirits, what's the Sanskrit?
It
says Bhutani. Pituri. It says Pituri in Bhutani. Yeah, it means. Yeah, it means even like Bhutas and Prachetas and those kind of things. Ali, do you have a point?
Yes, so they were children of the demigods, the Pandavas, but they were sort of. At that time, born of the earth, but it just shows that the power, people that are associated to Krishna, his intimate associates, they are the most powerful.
Oh.
They're more powerful than their gods and that sort of thing.
Oh. Yeah, Krishna's personal associates, like the cowherd boys, like Sri Dharma and them. There's a comment that when all the cowboys ran into the mouth of Agasura, the big snake demon, and then they got frightened and they called Krishna, and then Krishna ran in and then he expanded. But the acharyas have commented that even the cowherd boys, even one cowherd boy could have beaten Agasura. That's how powerful Krishna's associates are. And there's a description in the Nectar of Devotion that Sri Dharma, who is Sri Dharma? Srimati Radharani's older brother. One of Krishna's closest friends. He's having a duel with Lord Balaram. And Balaram has a club. And Balaram's very powerful. And Sri Dharma just has a stick. And he's fighting Balaram. Balaram's like hitting with the club and he's just with a stick, just fighting him is how powerful Krishna's associates are. Mm. Any points?
Well, Karna was the son of a demigod as well, but he wasn't able to defeat the Pandavas.
He was. Sometimes it's said he could have defeated Arjuna. But there are pastimes where Arjuna defeated him. So they were very equally matched.
They were brothers, weren't they?
Yeah, Karna was he was actually the eldest brother. And it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting in the Mahabharata, before the war, because Krishna tried to stop the war, So he went to Duryodhana and said, please give the kingdom back. And Duryodhana said, I won't. So then Krishna said to Yudhishthira, we're at the fine. But there's one point where Krishna goes to Karna and they ride on the chariot together and they're riding through the city, slowly, like riding through the city. And Krishna says to Karna, he says, actually, Yudhishthira, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula, and those five, they're your younger brothers. And he said, if you come now with me to them, they will accept you as the emperor. And they will, the five of them will fight with you and for you. And Karna said, I can't because I've taken a vow that I will never leave Duryodhana. And then Karna, because now he understood that he was Kunti's son, he said, I'll take a vow. On the battlefield, I won't kill the other four. He said, at the end of the battle, at the end of Kurukshetra, he said, there will still be five Pandavas. At the moment, there's six. There's six of us, six sons of Kunti. He said, at the end, there'll only be five, because either I will die or Arjuna will die. I'll fight with him, I'll kill him, or he'll kill me. He said, even though I can kill Bhima, Yudhishthira, Nakula, and Sahadeva, he said, I won't, out of respect for Kunti. Any other points? Mahabharata is good.
Yeah.
I like it. Especially when I was young. I used to love it. I used to go on book distribution. And I used to drive my car and then park in the car park. And then I'd go for book distribution. And then before I used to listen to the Mahabharata. And I used to lecture like on audio. And I get so enthusiastic from hearing about Mahabharata. When I pull my car up in the car park, before I go on book distribution, I used to stand on the bonnet of the car with a conch shell. And I used to go...
Right.
Yeah. And all the people in the car park, non-devotees, they would all go. And some guy like, I mean, if I did that now, 2019, you'd probably get thrown, the cops would come and be like, they'd ring and say like some guy is, maybe going to do something or... It was good back then, 20 years ago, you could get away with things, but these days it's a bit more difficult. As they all glorified the wonderful Rajasuya Jagya performed by that great saintly king, the servant of Lord Hari, they were not satiated, just as an ordinary man is never satiated when drinking nectar. So they all left the sacrifice, and it was so impressive, the whole thing, that they couldn't stop talking about it. It's like, so if you go to the sacred salmon retreat, is anyone going to the sacred salmon retreat? Yeah. A few devotees are going like that. So, sacred salmon retreat, or we had Gopanim the other day, or something. Then you go to one of these events, you can't stop talking about it. You come back, you just tell everyone, oh, I went there, and Indudumna Swami was there, you can't stop talking. I mean, it was a powerful event. So it was such a powerful event, everyone was talking about it. And then everyone was getting purified, because Prabhupada says, to speak of Krishna or to speak of the pure devotee is equally purifying. So if they're glorifying Yudhishthira, who's a pure devotee, or Krishna, you get the same purification. Nicham Bhagavata Sevaya. So by hearing about the Bhagavat, either Krishna himself or Krishna's representative, then you become purified. That is the system. So it's called Vasudev Kata. Ruchi, yeah. We have to develop a taste for hearing about the Bhagavatam. Just like I was driving up here, and then, sorry, I was a little late. just before I left, then we had a delivery at the farm, and I'm trying to leave, and then, something had to be unpacked and everything. So then I was driving up, and then, I turned on the radio to listen to the news, because, 1 week I'm down at the farm, I don't even know what's going on in the world. The whole world could have blown up or something. A lot of the time I don't know what's going on. Just someone says to me, that happened or that happened, then I hear. So I turn the radio on, once a week I turn on just to listen and see what's going on. But then, I heard about 3 or 4 stories, I just turned them off. So this is just useless. They're telling you things which are like totally mundane. Like that. But when you hear, today I was like preparing for class, I was reading this section. And then, this is something worth speaking about. This is something worth glorifying. And when you glorify this, then you become purified in your consciousness. Right? So we have to get a taste for the Bhagavad Gita, because then we'll speak about the Bhagavad Gita. Just like Jagannath Ramprabhu, when he's at his office, I don't know now, but a few years ago there was 4 or 5 devotees working in his company. Right? So then at lunchtime, he'd bring everyone in the oven, they'd just speak about the Bhagavad Gita. You go through the section that we're speaking now and explain it to the devotees there. So speaking about Krishna, that's the system. That's how we become purified. So they all left the sacrifice and they're all still talking about it. Right? Oh, what a powerful sacrifice. Did you see Narada? Did you see Lord Shiva? Did you see Indra? Krishna himself was bathing everyone's feet. Right? Shishupal attacked Krishna. Krishna took his head. Not one drop of blood was dropped in the sacrificial arena. So this is how we get purified, by speaking about this. Any points? At that time, Raja Yudhishthira stopped a number of his friends, immediate family members, and other relatives from departing. Among them, Lord Krishna. Out of love, Yudhishthira could not let them go, for he felt the pain of imminent separation. So, Yudhishthira did not want Krishna to leave. And actually, he convinced Krishna to stay. Krishna stayed a few more months. But sometimes we have to leave. The only reason we leave is to do service. Prabhupada left Vrindavan. With Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was going to go to Vrindavan. He made a plan. When he retired from being like the high court judge and that, he was going to Vrindavan. He was taking one devotee with him, one friend. And they were going to go and live in Vrindavan and absorb themselves in hearing and chanting. And he had a dream. And in the dream, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the dream and said, I do not want you to go to Vrindavan. I want you to stay in Navadvip and uncover the holy places. He said, I have a great deal of service for you to do. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was instructed to stay there and serve, right? Instead of personally going to Vrindavan and absorbing himself in Vrindavan. Same as Prabhupada. Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. He was satisfied. But he left Vrindavan. And Prabhupada said when he was in America, he said, I am feeling separation from Vrindavan. He wrote that on the Jaladuta, actually, while he was traveling across. He said, I'm feeling separation from my lords, Radha Damodara, Radha Govinda. I'm feeling separation from Vrindavan Dham. Right? So devotees will leave for service. Right? And you see later on, in the 11th canto, like further on, in the Bhagavad Gita, then when Krishna is about to leave the world, there are inauspicious omens within Dwarka. Right? Parts of the capital begin to fall to the ground, big stones in the turrets, in the palaces, they begin to fall. Inauspicious omens. So when these inauspicious omens are taking place, Uddhava, who was Krishna's cousin and counselor, and the most learned personality, a disciple of Brihaspati, then Uddhava, he understands what's taking place. And he says to Krishna, he says, you're going to leave. Otherwise, these things could not be happening. How could anything inauspicious happen when you're present? And then Uddhava says, I don't want to see your final pastime. I want to leave before you leave. And then Krishna says, no, I want you to stay. And he said, I will go, but you should stay. Because I have a service for you to do. He said that while I'm here on earth, there's several places I could not visit. Bhadrikashram in the Himalaya. Krishna did not personally go there. He went to many places, Krishna, when he was here. He didn't go to Bhadrikashram. So he said, I want you to go there and teach the sages who are residing there on my behalf the message which I will teach you in the Uddhava Gita, which is in the 11th canto. So for service, Uddhava had to stay. So sometimes we're forced by the order of the guru, of the senior devotees that we serve under. Sometimes you have to sacrifice for service. I remember years ago, 1996 I think it was, then they had at the end of the year we used to have a festival in Moolumba, after Christmas, between Christmas New Year, and all the devotees in Australia would go there for the festival. They don't do it anymore, but we used to all go. Every temple used to go there, but we have a nice festival. And then about 95, 96, then Tamal Krishnamaraj was going for the festival, and Jayapataka Swami. Normally they did not go, but they were going. So I was a disciple of Tamal Krishnamaraj. I wanted to go. So Anirudha Prabhu and many of the devotees were going. And Anirudha Prabhu said, you have to stay here. Because we can't all go. Some devotees have to stay there in the temple. And I was really upset. I said, no, I should go. My guru's out. He said, you are staying here. Forced me to stay. I didn't like it, but I had to stay. Because sometimes service comes before. It's the circumstance. Sometimes we have to sacrifice in Krishna consciousness. That's the situation. So sometimes Krishna or the spiritual masters or the authorities will ask us to make some sacrifice for service. So Krishna stays with Yudhishthira, but eventually Krishna has to go. And Yudhishthira wants to go with him, but he has to stay in his capital because his service is to be the emperor on behalf of Krishna. Service is more important. Sometimes we have to do like this. Any points? My dear Parikshit, the Supreme Lord remained there for some time to please the king. After first sending Sambha and the other Yadu heroes back to Dwarka. Thus King Yudhishthira, the son of Dharma, was at last relieved of his burning ambition, having by the grace of Lord Krishna successfully crossed the vast and formidable ocean of his desires. So it's explained in the purport that to organize a Rajasuya sacrifice is an extraordinary feat. Just to organize anything, is extraordinary. Sometimes you probably all have experience, you have to organize something. Even just like a home program, Bhakti Vriksha program, there's work involved. You have to cook for everyone and get the house ready and clean and maybe prepare a fire, whatever it is. So whenever you have to do something, what to speak of bigger events, we do the Rath Yatra or Janmashtami. Janmashtami is a big event here in Melbourne. It's like a big event. So it requires a great deal of organization. And you have to be qualified. You have to be empowered to perform these activities. So what to speak of a Rajasuya sacrifice? To organize that and have the potency to inspire everyone to go out and collect on your behalf. You know, like for Janmashtami, everyone goes out, Charuprabhu goes out and, you know, collects for the temple, the bulgur and stuff, and we collect donations and we all help. You know, imagine organizing the Rajasuya sacrifice. You know, Yudhishthira had to get all the Pandavas to go in the four directions for months on end. They had to travel out in the four directions, conquer all the kings, bring back all the wealth. And then he had to organize it, and he had to invite everyone and get everything organized. It was a huge, and they had to build a coliseum, like a arena, like an MCG. They had to build something that big. You know, a huge endeavor.
And also to please everyone that came, so except for Duryodhana, everyone was happy.
Yeah.
Which is even harder to do.
Yeah.
Than all of that, because how can you please everyone? Who, there's a lot of beings and people there.
Mm.
And pleasing Krishna.
Yeah, it's a huge, huge endeavor. Right. So the basic point is that, and it's pointed out in the purport that it was a struggle. We always say that, oh, you know, Prabhupada. No, it was a struggle. Yeah. Or, you know, this devotee did that or that. No, it's a struggle. You don't hear all the stuff behind the scenes. Yeah. Even I was at the Govardhan retreat. I try to go every year. They have a nice retreat in next to Govardhan Hill, Burujan Prabhu and Satchinandan Swami. They organize a nice retreat every year. And not an easy thing to organize. You know, 400 devotees or so come and then. And then it's even harder in India, you know, because India's like, you never know what's going to happen next. I mean. So a few years ago I was there, and then at the beginning of the program, we were all set on the roof of the ashram next door for the Holy Name Retreat. We go up on the roof and close to Govardhan Hill, and then, you know, Guru Jampuru and Mother Jagatarini and Satchinandan Swami, they speak. And then when the sun sets, then we all go down to the pandal. So, you know, we were all going down to the pandal. It was just getting dark. And then later on I found out, Prashanta Mataji and Mahabhagavat Prabhu, they told me that everyone's come down to the pandal. And the pandal, you know, quite a big pandal. It was getting dark. The lights went on. They couldn't get the electricity going, you know. And 2 minutes before everyone walked in, they got the electricity working. They've been working on it for like an hour or two beforehand. Yeah. So, you know, we just turn up to the situation, but there's so much that goes on behind the scenes. Yeah. So it's a struggle. You know, spreading Krishna consciousness is a struggle. And Yudhishthira Maharaj, the fact that he could do all of this, it's pointed out, it was a big struggle. It wasn't an easy thing. Because he was so powerful, he did it. Because he surrendered to Krishna, he was focused on Krishna. And this is the point, when you're surrendered to Krishna, you make something happen. That's why Prabhupada said, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. You know, like, you know when Prabhupada said that, you know the pastime of when he said that? You know, the pastime where he's walking on the beach, and there's the famous pastime where the devotees had to get the Chaitanya Charitamrita printed. You know, Prabhupada from, you know, when he came to America, he had Canto 1 ready when he came to America. It was already printed and ready. And then, you know, when Prabhupada got to America, he started Canto 2, and then he was working on the Bhagavatam. And then around about 1974 or so, then in the middle of translating the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada was asked by some disciples, please translate something about Lord Chaitanya. So then he was thinking, which one to translate, Chaitanya Bhagavat or Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then he asked, he had some disciples there, Bhavananda Prabhu and, can't remember the name of the other devotee, Achyutananda Prabhu. And then he asked them, you know, which one should I translate? And Achyutananda Prabhu said, Chaitanya Bhagavat. And then Bhavananda Prabhu said, Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then for some reason Prabhupada chose Chaitanya Charitamrita and then decided. So then he translated Chaitanya Charitamrita right in the middle of doing the Bhagavatam. But Prabhupada was so determined that he wanted to get the Bhagavatam finished that he wanted the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita translated, and then all the artwork done. And,
set,
and then everything, the whole thing, and published within 2 months. So he was on a morning walk with Rameshwara Prabhu, who was back then, he was in charge of the BBT around the world. And then he's on a morning walk, and Prabhupada said, I want the Chaitanya Charitamrita published. And then he said, within 2 months. And Rameshwara Prabhu was walking with Prabhupada, he stopped. He actually just physically stopped walking, because he was just shocked. He thought Prabhupada was joking. And he said, Prabhupada, are you serious? And Prabhupada said, yes. He said, two months. And then Rameshwara Prabhu was just thinking, and he said, Prabhupada, that's impossible. And Prabhupada put his cane down on the sand. And Prabhupada said, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. And he just kept walking. Prabhupada was serious. So Rameshwara Prabhu didn't even finish the morning walk. He just ran back to the car, got in the car, drove back to the temple. And he said, Prabhupada wants it done in 2 months. And everyone just went, All the devotees just came together who were in the BBT, the artists, the proofreaders, everyone. 2 months, and it was done in 2 months. Impossible. And it was a 24-hour shift. Right? Devotees were working 24 hours. Artists were painting, and then, when they took rest, another artist would come and painting. And then, and normally artists, they don't like someone else painting their painting. If you're painting and someone comes in and finishes the painting for you, what are you doing? That's my painting. You feel like that. So, but Ramaswamy, because he wanted to finish, devotees are coming, one devotee go to sleep at 10 o'clock, another devotee again said, finish that painting. I can't touch it, it's not my painting, I finish it. They pick up the paintbrush, finish it, and next morning the other artist would wake up and it's finished. But what are you, the artist was going crazy. You've touched my painting. So all sorts of things were happening, just so it would get done. And it happened in 2 months. So this is what happens when a devotee is so determined. That's what Prabhupada was like. Prabhupada would do it all the time. Do it. That was the mood. That's the mood. If we want it's going to be successful, we all have to be like that. Just determined to get things done. Because there's always going to be obstacles. You have to be completely, and then Krishna helps you. Yes. One day Duryodhana, while observing the riches of King Yudhishthira's palace, felt greatly disturbed by the magnificence of both the Rajasuya sacrifice and its performer, the king, whose life and soul was Lord Achyutya. In that palace, all the collected opulences of the kings of men, demons and gods were brilliantly manifest, having been brought there by the cosmic inventor Mayadhanava. With those riches, Draupadi served her husbands, and Duryodhana, the prince of the Kurus, lamented because he was very much attracted to her. So it's the same old thing. Lust, anger, greed, pride, envy, illusion. Same old thing. That's why problems start. So you see the whole Mahabharata, you see the Bhagavad, it's all. The war basically started from this pastime. Right? Kurukshetra really started from this. Because Duryodhana was insulted. Right? And when he walks out, Yudhishthira says, he said, this is not good. He said, this is going to cause problems. So he got down to Hastinapur. And then he calls Yudhishthira from Indraprastha. He said, come down. And he said, we'll do a gambling match. And when a Kshatriya is challenged, he can't refuse. Comes down, rolls the dice, rigs the whole thing. Loses everything. Has to go to the forest for 13 years, then the 14th year incognito. And then finally, they come back out. Krishna goes and says, please, let's just do this peacefully. Duryodhana says, I'm not giving anything back. And then the war starts. All just because Duryodhana wants Draupadi and Indraprastha. It's lust. Greed, envy, this is what causes problems, even to this day. all the problems are caused by. You look all the problems in the world, just all these things. People are lusty, they're greedy, they're proud, they're envious, they're angry, all these things.
Also because he was insulted by Draupadi.
Yeah.
That was one thing that triggered his ego. False ego in a very crazy way.
Yeah, because he couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
Because he's so attached to her and she laughed at him.
Wow.
Hmm. Lord Madhupati's thousands of queens were also staying in the palace. Their feet moved slowly, weighed down by their hips, and the bells on their feet tinkled charmingly. Their waists were very slender, the kumkum from their breasts reddened their pearl necklaces, and their swaying earrings and flowing locks of hair enhanced the exquisite beauty of their faces. It so happened that Emperor Yudhishthira, the son of Dharma, was sitting just like Indra on a golden throne in the assembly hall built by Mayadhanava. Present with him were his attendants and family members and also Lord Krishna, his special eye. Displaying the opulences of Brahma himself, King Yudhishthira was being praised by the court poets. So Krishna is his eye. That means he was getting guidance from Krishna. Krishna was guiding him. Someone who guides you, they're like your vision. Yeah, that's why we have guru. You say, oh, you know, Guru Maharaj, what should I do? He says, do this, do that. Because he's your eyes. You know, go that way, like that. So Krishna was giving that instruction.
Who was Madhupati?
Krishna. Yeah, a name for Krishna.
And who's Mayadhanava?
He is the architect for the demons. Yeah.
That's scary. Is he bad?
No.
He's born in a race which are they're asuras. Asuras means they're demigods, but they're very powerful, and they're into sense gratification. So the suras, which means the demigods, have control of their senses. And the demons don't have control of their senses. They're cousins. So yeah, he's born in that race. Proud Duryodhan, holding a sword in his hand and wearing a crown and necklace, angrily went into the palace in the company of his brothers, O king, insulting the doorkeepers as he entered. So, you know, this is not nice. You know, like someone walks in the temple and insults someone as they walk in, and well, it's not nice. So these kind of people, you just avoid them. Bewildered by the illusions created through Mayadhanava's magic, Duryodhan mistook the solid floor for water and lifted the end of his garment. And elsewhere he fell into the water, mistaking it for solid floor. So you know the pastime. Yeah, Mayadhanava, he made, if anyone was envious, then they would see the opposite. It was very hard to see the difference. So that way you could see who the enemy was as they walked in. My dear Parikshit, Bhima laughed to see this, and so did the women, kings and others. King Yudhishthira tried to stop them, but Lord Krishna showed his approval.
Particularly Draupadi would be laughing.
That's right.
Yeah. So you know, why did Krishna do that? Because Krishna wanted the war. Krishna wanted the war. So that's why Krishna did that. So like in that pastime, Krishna directly, you know, Krishna, everyone was laughing and Krishna just went, because if Krishna had said, like, you know, hey, stop, everyone would have calmed down. Krishna was going, so he started. Krishna wanted the war, so in order to make everyone come together and have that battle, then you know he comes. So in this pastime, you directly, but indirectly, Krishna's always orchestrating everything. But here he directly orchestrates things. Humiliated and burning with anger, Duryodhana turned his face down, left without uttering a word, and went back to Hastinapur. The saintly persons present loudly cried out, "Alas, alas!" And King Yudhishthira was somewhat saddened. But the Supreme Lord, whose mere glance had bewildered Duryodhana, remained silent, for his intention was to remove the burden of the earth. I have now replied to your question, O King, concerning why Duryodhana was dissatisfied on the occasion of the great Rajasuya sacrifice. So Krishna Chandra Bhagavan ki. So tomorrow night we'll begin chapter 76. The battle between Shalva.